So 2 weeks after the CBC in Quebec released a documentary exposing the chilling effects of rapid onset gender dysphoria onto young girls, trans activists and trans activist journalists are still up in arms, and they're still spreading lies about the harms of these radical procedures. It's Fake News Friday. I'm Candace Malcolm, and this is The Candace Malcolm Show. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into the program. Don't forget to like this video, subscribe to our True North channel if you're new around here. If you're listening to this podcast and you enjoy it, don't forget to leave us a 5-star review. It really helps us out. And finally, head on over to our website, www.tnc.news, where you can sign up for our newsletter so that you never miss any of our articles or any of our episodes. Okay, so welcome to Fake News Friday. This is our favorite show around here at True North. So thank you so much for tuning in. Last week on the program, we talked about the critics of this Radio Canada documentary called Trans Express, namely Rachel Gilmore, who basically tried to own the CBC and failed spectacularly. You should go check out that episode because we went through in great detail and debunked the many, many things that she tried to say about the documentary that were simply just not accurate. I told you on that episode that I would do a future episode breaking down the documentary because it is in French. It's a longer documentary. It's an hour long. And I think it's worthwhile that everybody knows what's in this documentary. Even if you don't want to go and watch an hour-long documentary with French in French with English subtitles, or, you know, like me, if you have sort of basic bad French that you learned back in high school and you trying to translate it, it might be easier for you to just hear from me. I'm going to go through and break down every single thing that happened in the documentary, and I really do think that every Canadian should watch that. Now, before I get into it, I want to point out the irony of me focusing a Fake News Friday episode on actually highlighting and applauding and congratulating CBC journalists, because I don't think that's ever happened in the history of this show. I don't think I've ever done an episode where I actually praise CBC, but credit where credit is due. They really did a tremendous job with this documentary. And I'll just, again, put that little caveat that this is the French version of CBC, which is kind of different. It's quite different than the English version of it. It's interesting because even when Pierre Poilievre, the conservative leader, talks about defunding the CBC, he doesn't want to defund Radio Canada. Radio Canada is different. It has a different flavor. It's still more mainstream in Quebec, and it's not as ideological or radically left or partisan as is English counterpart. Now, don't mistake this for an endorsement of the CBC. I still believe the CBC is terrible and that it deserves to be wholly defunded. And in case you needed any more convincing, there was a story that did break earlier this week that I'm going to quickly highlight. So on Tuesday, we learned that the CBC paid $15 million in bonuses in 2023, this despite mass layoffs that happened at that company. So they dished out $14.9 million in bonuses despite laying off hundreds of journalists right around Christmas time. According to documents received by the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, the CBC distributed bonuses to 1,143 of its senior staff members back in October. And these numbers only count up to October. They haven't had the data yet from December or November. So expect that figure to potentially rise even higher once those Christmas bonuses are counted. CBC gave 87% of its workforce a pay increase in 2023-2024 fiscal year, amounting to about $11.5 million in increased pay. This is partially probably because the Trudeau government negotiated such a great deal for the CBC with Google. The Online News Act decided that Google would be giving the Canadian government $100 million, and then the Trudeau government would get to dole that out however they please. The main beneficiary of that Online News Act's $100 million from Google will go to the CBC, and the CBC will also receive, on top of that, an additional $90 million from the Trudeau government in your taxes, in my tax dollars, adding up to a total government funding of $1.4 billion. So this is a state arm. This is Trudeau's media arm of the government. This is state propaganda, $1.4 billion. And yet, despite receiving $1.4 million from the taxpayer to do shoddy, bad journalism, that wasn't enough. Here we had the CBC CEO, Catherine Tait, speaking in front of the Heritage Committee in January, complaining about the CBC's budget, spreading misinformation and lies by saying the CBC is facing budget cuts. And here she is, just generally being totally useless and totally entitled. Let's play that clip.
Each year, with cuts to our budget, Unlike the private sector, we cannot manage fluctuations through loans or bridge financing. We must balance our budget each and every year. Over the 3 years of the pandemic, as revenues plummeted, most media companies had to lay off staff. We shifted resources to maintain services and to protect jobs. And we benefited from $21 million in additional government funding for each of the past 3 years. But today, our ability to shift resources and find savings is no longer sufficient to meet the growing deficit.
So she's complaining about having to balance her budget every year, something that every small business in Canada, every household in Canada has to do every year. Like, oh, I'm so hard done by. I have to balance my own budget. Complaining about cuts that don't exist. We know that CBC gets more money every single year. Just a clueless person there trying to play the victim when really we all know that she is not. She is the villain. We know that CBC, these are not the good guys. And to add insult to injury, it's not like they're even doing real journalism. They're not doing good journalism. It's not like the CBC is there providing this, amazing service to all Canadians and informing us about the news. That's not what we get from the CBC. We get a fringe, far-left, conspiratorial, authoritarian, flat-out, agenda-driven, often vindictive, often bigoted, very partisan media outlet. So no, don't trust the CBC, and don't take this episode to be any kind of an endorsement for the CBC. The CBC is terrible, and we all know it, and I hope it dies as soon as possible. All that being said, I do want to spend the show talking about Trans Express, the documentary which was aired on the investigative journalism program known as Enquête. It was 45 minutes. It was an hour long with television commercials, but the raw documentary, which you can see on YouTube, is 45 minutes. Like I said, it's in the French language. It does an excellent job chronicling the process of medical transition among minors in Quebec. But it also does some important investigative journalism, something that no other outlet in Canada has done. They sent a 14-year-old actress into a clinic, and she was able to get a prescription for puberty blockers in less than 20 minutes. The first time she'd ever seen a doctor, walked in, told him a story. Less than 20 minutes later, she was able to get a prescription to fundamentally begin altering her gender through medical transitioning. So it was really quite something. So unlike many of the radical trans activists who are criticizing the documentary, I actually spent the time to watch it, and I'm going to do my best to walk you through it right now. So first I'm going to do that. I'm going to walk you through the documentary. There were five subjects of the story, five women who were sort of featured throughout the documentary. And then there were also additional researchers, doctors, therapists, different kind of researchers and experts and specialists showing both sides of the story. So I'm going to walk you through the research and what we're learned. And then finally, I'm going to talk a little bit about the reaction from the trans activists and the journalists themselves went on to a popular Quebec talk show over the weekend called Le Tout de Monde and Parle. And they basically explained who they are, why they made this documentary. So we will get to that at the very end of the episode. So let's get going. The documentary starts by telling us about the purpose, which is to expose a process of so-called gender-affirming care, which, as I've talked about in the past, is really just a euphemism for sex change operations, sex change procedures, including drugs and surgery, that they prescribe to gender dysphoric youth. So the documentary explains it specifically focuses on girls and how the medical system, both the public system and the private system, because remember, we're talking about Quebec. Quebec has a private system for healthcare, unlike the rest of Canadians who are stuck with only government healthcare. But anyway, both the public and the private, and through medication and surgeries, how this allows adolescents to make irreversible changes. So that's what the documentary itself says. They do this by following four teenage girls, all with pre-existing medical conditions and mental illnesses, and how they were basically lured into an unnecessary medical intervention transitioning. Three of the four girls ended up detransitioning. Well, sorry, two of the four girls ended up detransitioning. One of them basically stops at the last minute and doesn't get the transition. The documentary interviews the four girls, their parents, several doctors, and then we also hear from researchers and activists. There's a great deal of research in the documentary, including highlighting studies, statistics, comparing treatments between what's happening in Quebec with other advanced Western countries, namely Scandinavia, but also the United States. I just want to note that the documentary is not one-sided. It's not something that it doesn't look like something that we would have produced here at True North. It doesn't look like Matt Walsh's What is a Woman? It's done by the CBC. It presents both sides. It's very neutral. It's very balanced. It's very fair. Probably spends equal time explaining why these transitionings are good and why the transitioning is bad. And I think that that's part of it that's really telling. The fact that the trans activists are so mad that this exists, even though half of the documentary is explaining their perspective and promoting their views. They don't like the fact that there's even half of a documentary devoted to pointing out the other side of the story. And so I think that tells you a lot about the people who are critical of this documentary. Okay, so let's go through it. So the first person that we meet is a young lady named Clara. Clara is a pseudonym, and she is now 24 years old. We heard that she struggled with her mental illness from the age of 8. She was very anxious, very awkward, especially during puberty. She became very self-critical. She tried to commit suicide, tried to kill herself in 2015. And shortly after that suicide attempt, she saw a video on the internet, which made her think that she had found the source of all her problems. She decided that she didn't fit into either gender, but she definitely did not want to be a girl anymore. Her mom quickly affirmed what she was going through and found a psychologist that specialized in gender dysphoria. So at the age of 15, Clara became a patient, and she was quickly prescribed puberty blockers. A few months later, she started the next phase, which was testosterone, and she noticed that her voice became much deeper and she started to grow more hair. She noticed that her body was changing, but that did not make her happier. She didn't feel happier. Nothing changed with her mood, and she still wanted to commit suicide. We later learned that after 4 months on the drug, Clara was hospitalized again for a suicide attempt. It was at that point that the doctors began to question her initial diagnosis of gender dysphoria, and the doctors at the hospital that she went to made some recommendations. They recommended that she quickly, immediately stop taking testosterone and that she found a new therapist, because they considered the therapist that was kind of leading her down the path of transitioning wasn't doing her job and that she needed to find a new therapist. Well, Clara ignored both those recommendations. She went straight back home after leaving the hospital to talk to her gender-affirming therapist again, and she continued to take the testosterone. Clara said that she was 100% passing for a teenage boy at this point. She was wearing binders over her breasts, which basically tape down your chest so that it doesn't look like you have any breasts. She said that those were very uncomfortable. For that reason, she decided to move forward with the surgery, and she did go ahead and receive a double mastectomy. This is at age 17, after being on drugs for 2.5 years. We then heard from her parents, who said it was almost the next day, maybe a day or two later, that we all saw that she had made a mistake. Claire came back and said, even though I had my breasts removed, I still felt like I had women's breasts and I couldn't look at the mirror. I avoided looking at myself in the mirror. And then by the age of 20, she was completely done with the whole trans thing. She started wearing a wig and got breast implants so that she would look more like a woman. So by the age of 20, she was back to wanting to be a woman. So that's the story of the first person, Clara. Let's move on to the second subject, is a woman named Jane. So we meet Jane. We learn that she had always been a tomboy and she always felt a little bit more masculine. She said that she was watching a live stream of a trans person who had come out to their family, and everybody was so happy and so proud, and it made her feel really good for that person that she was watching to be trans. Sadly, we learned with this case, with this woman, Jane, that she was raped in 2020 and that she was dealing with the trauma of that rape as a teenager. She said that she kept thinking that if she was a man, if she was a guy, she would have never been raped. This would have never happened. She said she had a feeling of disgust about being a woman over the event. She basically knew that she wanted to transition. She wanted testosterone. So she went to her family doctor, quickly received a referral, went to a specialist at a clinic at the McGill University in Montreal. So this is at age 16. After two consultations, she received her first prescription for puberty blockers in 2022. And I'll show you this clip. It's in French, but she is documenting her journey and what it looked like as she transitioned from a girl to a boy. So you can just see how quickly, 1 month, 2 month, 3 month, 4 month, she goes from looking feminine and like a girl to having a deep voice and looking like a man. Let's play that clip.
2 mois sur la testostérone.
2 mois sur la testostérone.
3 mois sur la testostérone.
9 mois sur la testostérone.
10 mois sur la testo.
So the documentary later tells us that 1.5 years after her first dose, Jane received a double mastectomy, had both her breasts removed at the age of 18. I'll just add my own observations to this subject, Jane, here. She actually seemed like a pretty happy person, and I didn't think that she was going to end up being a detransitioner. The way that they showed her, the way that they showed her transition, she struck me as a very happy-go-lucky person. She didn't really seem mentally ill, but she was dealing with the trauma of being raped as a teenager. I think she was 15 when that happened. And so I didn't expect that later in the documentary, she would be one of the people that came to regret her choices, because in the clips that we saw, she actually seemed pretty happy. But later in the documentary, as I say, we did learn that Jane also became a detransitioner. And at the end of the documentary, we're told that, like Clara, Jane realized shortly after her double mastectomy surgeries that she had made a huge mistake. She said this, "Regrets came weeks later when the bandages came off and I saw my new body." She did not like what she saw, and she immediately wrote to her surgeon asking if she could be reconstructed. Now, this is the incredibly ironic part of the documentary, of her story, because as soon as Jane said that she didn't like what she had done, she made a mistake and she wanted to detransition, what was she told? She was told that she would have to wait. She was told that she needed a psychiatric assessment that would last for more than a year. And she was told that the whole process would probably take her 3 years. So when she wanted to transition, she had all of this support, she had all the resources, all of this encouragement. And then as soon as it was the other direction and she wanted to detransition, none of that existed. She was told that she had to wait, she had to slow down, that she needed to see more health professionals. And she was basically told just to wait. Her own surgeon told her that if it had been her own child, she would have slowed down the process. She would have not wanted it to go as quickly as it did for Jane, because children need to have a time to think. Imagine hearing that. Imagine being a young woman who feels like you made a mistake, and then all of a sudden the professionals, medical professionals around you whom you trusted told you that, you know, you had to wait and that you probably did make a mistake. And if it was their own kids, they wouldn't have let them do that. It's so harsh and so sad. Okay. Let's move on to our third subject. Here is a woman named Antoinette, and I believe this is also a pseudonym. We never see this woman's face. Her story is told from the perspective of her father, and we also never see her father's face. So they've done this all anonymously, but basically, here's a young woman who was suffering from mental illness. She was suffering from anorexia. She had just spent 2 months in an eating disorder unit at the hospital. And while she was there in this eating disorder unit at Saint-Justine Hospital in Montreal, she started speaking to a therapist and basically talking about how the reason behind her anorexia was led from unwanted changes in her body during puberty. Specifically, she said that her breasts grew very large and she felt very uncomfortable. She was basically trying to starve herself in order to hide her breasts because she didn't like having big breasts, more or less. So at this point, two different doctors begin offering her puberty blockers and began suggesting that she was trans. Now, according to her father, the gender dysphoria was never formally evaluated. There was no psychiatric assessment, no specialists, but nonetheless, several doctors started offering her these drugs anyway. She was 16 years old. At the time, she was told that it was her decision and hers alone. And so she decided that she did want to go on to puberty blockers and start transitioning. Her dad says that, look, she had an eating disorder. She had very strong anxiety, depression, and suicidal ideation. It's not clear how someone could consent to something like this. So the father was very upset and he decided to intervene. He spoke to the doctor directly. And eventually, Lupron, the drug, was ruled out. So Lupron is the puberty blockers. And the dad says that he was convinced that had he not asked questions to the doctor, his daughter would have been put onto drugs and onto puberty blockers. Now, eventually, the daughter revealed that she really just didn't want her breasts anymore. She wanted to have this double mastectomy surgery. And she heard online that that means that she must have been trans. So at age 16, she could legally get a mastectomy without parental consent in Quebec. And the father was very angry about this because he said the doctors who were saying this was okay didn't know her history, didn't know about her background, and didn't really care. So the father was up in arms and he decided to write a letter to the doctor and to the head of the hospital. He denounced the haste to present medical treatment without verifying the condition. And we later learned the dad says that he did hear back from the hospital. He wasn't expecting to hear anything back, but the hospital did get back to him and just said that they agreed and that they were going to change their practices. They would be profoundly modified and that there had been other similar complaints in the hospital, including from another father who had a 13-year-old girl who had a very similar story and a very similar complaint. And so this is kind of a happy story. The dad intervened. The dad spoke up. The dad said this is not acceptable. And because of it, he saved his daughter from doing something that she would very likely live to regret. So he said that he was very thankful that he saved his daughter. He saved her from mutilating herself, and she didn't have the need to detransition in because she didn't do the surgeries in the first place. Okay, now we have our fourth and final subject, a girl named Ilios. And Ilios is the sort of one happy ending story, supposedly a successful transition. So this individual transitioned, and as far as the documentary is concerned, she remains to be happy and as a transitioned boy. So she began to transition, pretend to be a boy at age 15. And this followed a suicide attempt in the same year. So the same year, she tried to commit suicide. And then a few months later, she got the diagnosis of gender dysphoria, began taking puberty blockers and testosterone. It's really interesting to see how many of these stories are similar in that you have like a mentally unwell teenage girl who is then led down this path. So she says that she started taking the drugs made her feel a little bit better, but it wasn't enough. I'm still not well, she said, and she knew that the solution would be the double mastectomy. So at age 16, she went for that surgery, and she said, when I saw the results, I cried so hard. They were tears of joy. I told my dad this was the best decision of my life. So this is the so-called success story. And just my observations, a little sad, just looking at this individual. She appears to be very fragile, very unwell. This doesn't appear to be a happy, thriving, well-adjusted person. This appears to be a deeply confused and depressed young lady who is clearly unwell. So again, those are just my observations, but this isn't exactly the poster child of a successful medical treatment in my books. Okay, the fifth and final subject of the documentary was that undercover actress that I told you about earlier. So Radio Canada has a 14-year-old actress going in, showing just how easy it is to get these drugs. And of course, the CBC wouldn't be the CBC if they didn't try to take a knock at private healthcare. So basically, the premise here is that if you're in the public system, you have to wait a long time, that there's wait lists somewhere between 8 months and a year. But there is an alternative. You can go to the private system. You can go to a consultation for $115 out of pocket. And with that, you can very easily get a letter. Everybody knows, everybody in these communities knows that there's a few doctors who will just basically rubber stamp you, write you that letter, and then you'll be good to go to get your drugs and start your transition. So we had the 14-year-old girl. She just shows you the process. She went to the doctor alone, told the doctor that she was trans. The receptionist made her read and sign a 7-page document that just described all the side effects. She kind of just breezed through it, signed it, goes into the doctor's office, tells him a made-up story. And basically, there's not really a lot to the meeting. Within 5 minutes, they're talking about surgery. The entire consultation lasted less than 17 minutes. They did not talk about the side effects at all of taking testosterone. The doctor did mention that she would not be able to have children in the future. And as a 14-year-old girl, I don't know any 14-year-old girl who can think that far ahead to decide whether or not they want children at that age. But at the time, she just, shrugged it off, said, yeah, that's fine. And just like that, she was given the green light to start a chemical treatment towards self-sterilization. So it is pretty unbelievable stuff. And again, great research and great journalism from Radio Canada. Okay, so those are the stories. The stories are very compelling. As you can see, there's sort of a trend within all of them. These are young women who are very unwell, who are suffering from other mental illnesses, and they kind of get like sucked into this path where they are impacted by videos that they've seen online, by doctors telling them that this is sort of like a silver bullet to solve all their problems. And with the subjects that Radio Canada chose, obviously, it wasn't the right decision for them, as 3 out of 4 are not living as trans today. Okay, let's quickly go through the research here. The main person who is quoted throughout the documentary is actually a pro-transitioning professor and researcher named Ali Poulin Saint-Saffron. And she is featured throughout the documentary presenting the pro-trans side of the argument. So anytime that they feature a doctor or researcher with an opposing position, they always go back to Saint-Saffron, who gets an opportunity to refute whatever she just said. whatever that other doctor just said. So she explains why Quebec does what it does, and it's basically based on two theories that are stacked on top of each other. The first is called the Dutch Protocol, which basically says that gender must be affirmed. They basically took a lot of interviews from older trans people who have transitioned. And those people said, look, my childhood was incredibly difficult and my life would have been a lot easier if I could have just transitioned as a child, because then I would have never gone through puberty in the other direction that I didn't want to go through puberty. And so that was sort of the basis behind the idea that they were going to start treating children who mentioned that they might suffer from the same disorder. And so the protocol basically includes three steps. So the first one is puberty blockers, so they stop puberty. The second one is that they add hormone drugs on top of that. So if you're a girl transitioning to be a boy, you start taking testosterone. And then the third is a surgery, the double mastectomy, to remove the breasts. The main drug that they use for puberty blockers is called Lalupron. And the documentary tells us that the prescriptions for Lalupron for adolescent girls has shot up 600% since 2010. And a study showed that 9 out of 10 adolescents who take puberty blockers go on to take the next step, which is the testosterone and the medical transition. So stacked on top of the Dutch protocol is the idea that only the person, only an individual can decide their own gender. So only that person knows. That's why doctors don't care. They don't want to talk to parents. They don't want to hear from parents. They don't want to hear from other doctors who might have concerns about transitioning. We hear from this Quebec researcher that I mentioned, Sansafran, who basically just says that interviews with parents are not valid because they are not in the child's head. The child and only the child can decide what to do. And so that is what we're dealing with here. The journalists then go out and try to find the other perspective. So that they show you that that is what the perspective is for the pro-trans people. And that's basically the foundation of what is done in Quebec, is based on those theories. But then they also say, look, there's no medical consensus. There is heavy debate around this topic. And so the team goes out to try to find, understand what the other side of the story is. They go to a conference in New York City that is specifically focused on transgender adolescents. And while they're there, they interview a couple of doctors that sort of refute what's going on in Quebec. They say that it is impossible to give a letter of recommendation after a single session of therapy. And they say that rules state that the child must be evaluated physically, psychologically, and socially. We then meet another doctor, an American doctor named Lisa Littman, who says that she started noticing that there was a trend where she would see like one trans girl in a school, and then all of a sudden she would see a second, a third, a fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh. And she noticed this new concept, basically rapid onset gender dysphoria, where girls and young women start to talk about their discomfort. And all of a sudden, it's not just one girl coming forward. It's like an entire class or entire group of friends. Like one person does it and they all want to do it. And she's sort of starting to see signs of a social contagion. It's interesting. Anyone who has read the book Irreversible Damage by Abigail Schreier, who's an investigative journalist with the Wall Street Journal, she put out this great book in 2020 talking about the same concept, the idea that this is a part of a social contagion, that basically the phenomenon of transgenderism, it used to be called transsexuals, they were predominantly men transitioning to be women. But then starting around the 2010s, we started to see a lot of girls wanting to transition to be boys, something that really there was no history of that. We hadn't really seen that phenomenon before. So that is part of the concern that was outlined in the documentary, saying that these are perhaps not genuine feelings, but rather just confused young girls who are suffering from other illnesses, sometimes borderline personality disorder, being confused for perhaps having gender dysphoria, being influenced by their peers, being influenced by activist doctors, and then leading to these devastating decisions and terrible regret that we saw in the young women in the documentary. And then the second major critique of what is going on in Canada and what is going on in Quebec is that contrary to the Dutch protocol, that transitioning doesn't actually improve mental health. So basically they went to Scandinavia and Finland. They had one doctor who said that he quickly noticed that several of the new patients were not doing very well afterwards. They still had a lot of psychiatric problems, especially depression, anxiety, and autism. And in 2019, they decided to evaluate the impact of hormones and other sex change drugs on mental health, and basically found that people's mental health doesn't necessarily improve. So if you're doing well and you're happy and you're well-adjusted in your transition, you'll probably continue to be happy and well-adjusted after the transition. But children who are suffering with mental health issues, that doesn't necessarily improve after transition. They continue to struggle, and sometimes it's not worth. Basically, that this is not a miracle cure for all kinds of problems, which to me is pretty common sense. They then go to Sweden, and they talk to Dr. Landon, who, again, I featured him in the previous episode that I did when I was talking about Rachel Gilmore, because she criticized Dr. Landon, saying he was a quack. Well, actually, he's the head of a very prestigious hospital and university in Sweden. So he analyzed 195 studies to evaluate the effect on hormones on kids, basically concluded that there is no conclusive data which provides that there is benefits to reduce symptoms like anxiety, depression, and suicide ideation. That means overall, he said, that we cannot recommend this treatment. So hence, this is why in both Finland and Sweden, doctors have completely given up on this idea of puberty blockers, with some exceptions, but more or less, the law is that hormones are banned for anyone under 16 years old, and that double mastectomies are banned for minors. And so the documentary basically concludes by saying that in Quebec, maybe we need to study more about what other countries are doing and keep updated with the latest science, and basically just urge for more caution. And so that's it. That's the entire documentary. Nothing homophobic, nothing crazy, nothing anti-trans, nothing ideological, unlike the criticism that we saw from the radical trans activists, including people like Rachel Gilmore and lots of trans activists online. We also saw an article over at Extra, which is the gay LGBTQ plus magazine in Canada, just really, really criticizing this documentary, making it seem like the people who made it were absolute monsters. Contrary to all that, the documentary is very reasonable, very balanced, very even. And just again to show how far off base the left-wing radical trans activists and journalists who are critiquing the documentary are, the journalist behind this documentary went on Le Tout de Mondel Parle. Le Tout de Mondel Parle is the most popular talk show in Quebec, probably the most popular and watched talk show in all of Canada, just because so many people in Quebec watch it and consume it, and it really impacts the culture in Quebec. So these journalists were on there, and they sort of refute every single thing that these trans activists are saying about them. So they were asked, you know, what compelled you to make this documentary? And, you know, they say basically that they just received an onslaught of concerned parents writing to them and communicating to them and telling them the same kind of story, and how their daughters were basically being pushed towards medical transitions, and they felt uncomfortable about it. It was interesting. They talked about how most of the people who wrote to them, they were sort of expecting them to be conservatives and people who were like traditionally opposed to, you know, all kinds of different changes when it comes to gender and sex. But it was the opposite. They're usually mostly like liberal parents who are very open-minded and very open to homosexuality and all that kind of stuff. And they were the ones who were experiencing this. They were also asked about the Scandinavian model, and they basically go through and talk about how these procedures are now banned in Finland and Sweden, and how hormones are not used at all over there. And then finally, we heard them say that a lot of the parents, the reason that they went to Radio Canada and not like a conservative or a right-wing media outlet is because they didn't want to be seen as attacking trans ideology. They didn't want their stories to be hijacked. They just wanted to tell the story so that people in Quebec could understand what was happening and how it was happening so fast. So again, I think that the appearance over on Le Tout de Monde really just dismantles any of the arguments that you see from radical trans activists. Final news story that I wanted to include here is that earlier this week on Tuesday, we learned that the UK will follow Finland and Sweden in banning puberty blockers for minors. So here is a little news clip explaining what that looks like.
Bring you a bit of breaking news, which may be of interest to some of you. It's about puberty blockers. Now, these are drugs that are used to delay the changes of puberty in transgender youngsters. In terms of how they are prescribed by the NHS, there has been a lot of controversy over the last few years about this. At the moment, they are only prescribed to children attending gender identity services as part of clinical research, and they are not routinely offered to children at gender identity clinics, but they are still offered. Well, the government, NHS England, has just confirmed that children will no longer be prescribed puberty blockers at gender identity clinics. This is coming from NHS England, that just broke in the last few moments.
So some good news coming out of England. And I think that we can all hope that that's the direction that we're heading, and hopefully Canada will be the next one. Like I said, I think this documentary will have a huge impact in Quebec. The way it was presented was very fair and very moderate, and I think reasonable people will see it and conclude that it is the wrong decision to allow children to make these kind of changes to their body. And despite the journalists taking some shots at conservatives, saying that they didn't want the story to be painted as a conservative issue, the reality is that the conservatives are correct on this issue. A person cannot change their sex. They cannot mutilate their body and all of a sudden become the other sex. Mutilating a child's body in the name of progress is wrong, and it is evil, and history will not look kindly on those pushing this ideological butchery. Every Canadian should watch this documentary. Every Canadian should reach out to their local representative, their member of parliament, and demand action. They should demand that these barbaric practices be banned, especially for minors, just as they've been banned in the UK, Sweden, and Finland. It's Fake News Friday. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Candace Malcolm, and this is The Candace Malcolm Show.